Welcome back. My next guest is Nestor Aparicio, joining us today. Always informative, always thoughtful, and lots to talk about, lots to unpack. Our condolences, of course, go out to Alex Collins and his family. That's the biggest story for us right now. We have the Michael Orr story. Kevin Brown, still lots to talk about there. Orioles, Ravens, some concerts perhaps. Nestor, welcome in.
Well, you know what the lead story really is? The baseball team's really good. That above and beyond anything in this city. I mean, I'm celebrating my 25th anniversary. At some point, I'm going to get the new logo up. I'm going to be in Ocean City all week doing the Mako conference. So you're going to hear from Senator Cardin here. You're going to hear from Senator Van Hollen, Wes Moore, like the governor, the controller. Lots of people are going to be coming on here this week. So, you know, I'm going to be doing that. But the late night focus of these games out in San Diego, Oakland this weekend, last weekend in Seattle, amazing Saturday night win. I was over at Costas on Sunday. And, I mean, I was there at I met Leonard Raskin for Crabs at like 7:15. The game was at 4. He got there a little earlier than I thought. My wife and I got there like in the fifth inning. We drove over, missed the fourth inning, got there. We were there for the last four or five innings of the game. Dennis, everybody's on every pitch. Everybody in the bar, black, white, young, old, grandmoms, everybody's watching the game on a Sunday afternoon like it's a playoff game. Mullins goes over the wall, comes back. They give up the run, then the home run. Like – The fact that the baseball team is playing baseball like this in August, doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about the Kevin Brown mess, or that we're not interested in the Ravens, or certainly former Ravens with news and tragedy. And I mean, Alex Collins, man, like,
That's crazy.
So
I have strong thoughts about motorcycles and whatnot. And it's not the motorcyclists themselves, but it's just people not paying attention. You just don't have any metal around you. And it's really not a good outcome when they get involved in accidents. They're usually deadly. You can't certainly get me on two wheels, not at my age, not at any age. But anyway, that aside, it's tragic when a young man who's a few days shy of his 29th birthday loses his life in that fashion.
Well, the last interaction I had with him was, you know, he did the Irish dance, and the Irish dance troupe was playing the Lyric. And I had a relationship with the Lyric, and I was promoting their shows, and I loved having weird guests on. And, you know, but I had an Irish dancer on for, you know, 20 minutes talking about the history of Irish dance. And at that time, it was like literally November when this thing happened. You can go check it out because it's up at Baltimore Positive, the piece I did on the Irish dance troupe. And, he, you know, he invited Alex Collins down to the show, and Alex wanted to go. And I mean, he even gave me his numbers in my phone. If I looked at my phone, the last text I have with him would have been about that event. He didn't go because it was a game weekend and it was a Friday. And then I said, hey, if you want to go, this guy wants to invite you down and make a stink about it. A tragedy. And the Michael Orr thing, by the way,
out of left field, does he have a book coming out? And I'm not trying to throw rocks at him or his family he came from, but man, oh man, how many years has it been? I think since 2009 when the movie The Blind Side came out. So it's been a minute, Nestor.
Yeah, and I guess it's out of the public eye. And the woman, Tui, Leanne Tui, right? I saw her, you know, a dozen times when Michael Orr played. I mean, matter of fact, I think I saw her. I remember being at Michael Orr's locker after the Super Bowl. I have a picture of me and Michael. I don't have a lot of pictures of me with players necessarily after the game because everybody scatters at the Superdome. We were working. We had Buster. We had stuff going on. But I vividly remember seeing Leanne Tui that night, you know, outside the locker room because, you know, she was a character from a movie, you know, played by Julia Roberts. You know, it's like, so when you see the real person, you see Michael Orr, you're like, oh, that's her. I think I was in an elevator once with her and maybe on the road and, you know, city, because I was always stayed where the team was. And, you know, I talked to her in an elevator once, but like, I mean, they didn't do the media tour here. As a matter of fact, Michael ran from that. Michael didn't like that, you know, and Michael was a really simple guy, really friendly, sweet. Quiet. Sweet kid, really a nice kid. And one night we were doing the show at Buffalo Wild Wings, and on a Monday night, no wings, and the players always came in there. Like I could tell you Tyrod Taylor came in there one night, and I just happened to be doing the show with Brandon Stokely. And he's like, yeah, I'll sit down with you guys. You know, like he was just there to eat because it was so close to the facility, yeah, especially the old facility back in the day, right? And Michael Orr came in and ate wings, literally sat at the table, watched the show. He didn't really want to come on because he didn't like talking about himself, you know, like he wasn't, he was a very sort of self-effacing kind of cat, and the movie sort of embarrassed him to some degree. He didn't like the portrayal of him in the movie.
I'm sure he didn't, but you know what? Hollywood has a way of doing that with movies, not just with Michael Orr, but I think back to movies such as Rudy, right? Rudy was the Notre Dame kid. I guarantee you that that's not exactly how the story went. Hollywood amplifies stories, creates other, you know, they may depict some events, but it's not the actual events. So
I had Rudy on the show. I don't know if I talked to him about
you
that
did.
Or not.
Yeah,
you know, he always
absolutely.
Come by Radio Row. Good guy. Really good.
Yeah.
Good
but
guy.
They usually make the hero better than what he was in real life. So I don't know what the side story is between Michael
well,
and
they made this
and
relationship
Chewie, but
between this family and Michael Orr.
Right.
Like, you know, what it was and the brother
they
and like
saved
all that
him.
stuff,
They
right?
saved him, although he was a five-star recruit anyway, and he was already starting in high school at tackle. He was already a rising star. So interested to see how this thing is going to play out, but it always comes down to money, right? The root of all evil, if you will.
Yeah, don't you hate it? Isn't that
It's
awful? The
money, man.
family and
Follow the
love,
money.
right?
Yeah. Where's the love?
Yeah.
And I would have Chewies were wealthy before they ever even heard of Michael Orr, so they were well off. And Michael made, of course, a lot of money in the NFL. So I don't know who's running out of what, but that's what I suspect at the bottom of this. It's money.
Who's running out of money?
Somebody's
Right?
running out of money. It's either him or the Chewies or both. But somebody's running out of money to make a stink out of it 14, 15 years later.
Well, I mean, from the football perspective for me, I mean, we're not going to learn anything about the football team till next month, right? Like, and I said that to Luke sort of flippantly. I'm sort of like, okay, this preseason game the other night, it's like, we don't know anything about the Todd Monken thing. All I know are these narratives that Chad Steele and John want to get out. And it's very, very clear that Lamar didn't like Greg Roman. It's very, very clear Lamar didn't feel heard by Greg Roman. He's now been heard by Eric DaCosta and Steve Bisciotti with a $72 million check, right? So he's heard that. He's wearing all the ice now, right? He's got the ice all on the sidelines. And Evan Washburn gives him a hard time about the ice, and you know he can buy and sell Evan 80 times now, you know, because that's the kind of money these guys have. And things change to the ultimate compliment to Joe Flacco I would ever pay him. He is the same guy now as he was when he had zits and showed up in that beaten up Volvo with all the black smoke coming out of the diesel when he showed up with the jersey plates at my house back in 2008. Like, the money never, you know,
never changed them.
It screwed with how people dealt with him, but it never messed with how he dealt with people. And it still doesn't. And I texted him a week ago.
He banked and went to work every day is what he did.
So I don't know where Lamar is with this. I would think Lamar really wants to win, you know, and Lamar's put a lot of effort into winning, and they put a lot of effort into putting weapons around him. But I want to see Lamar Jackson throw the ball 35, 40 times a game and how that's going to look, because that's what they're going to have to do. All we do is talk about wide receivers and tight ends. And I'm like, there's one ball, and in the previous offense, they threw it 18 to 25 times a game. And that's how much, you know, all these guys want to be targeted in one game. You know, Andrews is thinking, I was getting 12 targets, catching 7-8 passes. All right. So he was 40% of the offense at the time. All right. Am I still, maybe I don't get 12, but maybe I get 10. Now, you know, Odell Beckham's here making all this money. He's not a third down wide receiver. I mean, they're paying him a lot of money. He's a five down wide receiver at this point. You know, he's a fourth and one back shoulder wide receiver. So, and then Bateman's trying to find his way. Aguilar's finding his way. Oh, and Zay Flowers he's the prettiest girl at the dance, right? He's the new kid in town. So the joystick. And then they're going to run the ball, and they got a cranky running back. And oh, by the way, this just in. Lamar's their best running back. He doesn't like to be called that. He's a $72 million running back. He is still the guy that if he runs the ball 8, 12 times a game, they have a better chance of winning. So I what are they going to do? They're all loving it. I love Lamar. Lamar loves the coordinator. We love the installation of the production of the productivity of the – okay. I mean, and they're going to beat Houston 34-14, right?
They are.
I mean,
they are.
Right? Like, so no matter what happens, they're going to win this first game. I mean, I like their schedule a lot, quite frankly. I don't think they need to be good sort of right away. They need to roll with Cincinnati, but I think they're better than Pittsburgh and Cleveland. I mean, I really do. I think they put together a really good team. I think it could go really well. This left guard thing, the back end of the secondary, the kicker can kick from anywhere. But what the offense is and the efficiency of the offense and how they're going to pass the football, how they're going to throw the football, you and I are going to be evaluating that in October, trying to do the math on what they did in September, because we're not going to see anything for a month. So that's why I think the baseball team's more interesting right now. Not just the fiasco with Kevin Brown or the fiasco with the state of Maryland or the future of the franchise or the lease. I still think them winning every night's the most important thing that's going on. But the football team, I mean, unless somebody pulls a hammy, I and they've thrown me out, so I can't even go watch the goofy practices and see them do all of this Ravens production that they did in the pregame. That's just as contrived as anything on the baseball side. Like, if you watch Sandusky and Woodson, and I mean, it is a love-in infomercial.
Yes.
It's gross. It's gross. And they don't even point out the most important things, which are, here are the deficiencies with the team. Here are the questions. Here are the they don't want to hear. We have no questions. We're a contender.
There's plenty of questions. You just list them. The secondary is a huge concern for this team, as is the timing for the passing game. It's going to take a minute for those guys to get on the same page together, especially what looks to be very much a pass first offense.
Well, it's very clear they invested this money in Roquan Smith because they knew Calais Campbell's not around. They know Marlon Humphrey is a pretend leader, not a real leader. And they needed a leader there, right? So Roquan Smith's going to take over that role and be the captain of this team, the Ray Lewis, the heart and soul of the team. And they love him. They love his. They love everything about him. He's a character guy. I mean, everything you. So they have that kind of way more handled than even you and I acknowledge, because when they brought him in last year, Lamar fell apart in the team. Right? Starting from scratch on that defensive side, where Harbaugh has his guy, McDonald, who's you know, he winked at him when he was 23 years old and said, "You're going to be my guy if I'm still here." So, I mean, Harbaugh has aligned this thing, and I think the offensive side, from a political standpoint, and again, Chad Steele keeps me away from the owner. I don't get to ask questions about any of this, so I'm stuck here guessing. But accountable, very accountable. And I think with Harbaugh keeping his job or his happiness, Harbaugh doesn't know anything about offense. Harbaugh's not an offensive coordinator. I mean, that's clear going back to, you know, winning and losing with Jim Caldwell or Cam Cameron. He's been through a lot of offense coordinators and a lot of quarterback coaches, right, through this period of time, and only a handful of two quarterbacks, really. I mean, in the whole time, but a lot of ideological changes that the owner's pissed about this or that or whatever. Well, I'll change it. We'll mix it up. I'm searching for something new. We'll take on this running quarterback and have him run into linebackers if that's what you want. But we need to run the ball. We need to draft and have Willie Sneeds and. You know, we need to have Pat Ricards, different kinds of football players to play this way. Now they bring Monken in, and it feels like Monken's the head coach of the offense, right? I mean, like, he's no nonsense. Almost reminds me of Sergeant Slaughter a little bit.
Gary,
you know what I mean?
Well, he's got that Gary Kubiak vibe. Gary Kubiak had that pedigree coming in, and Joe had a phenomenal year. Gary worked with him on his footwork, demanded that Joe do certain things. And, of course,
Joe respected Gary Kubiak because he played in the league.
Yeah, and Justin Forsett had a career here. Gary Kubiak had that pedigree. But John Harbaugh has been that CEO head coach, special teams background, as we all know. But he's got a light touch on the reins on the offense and the defense. But the heavy touch has always been by his coordinators.
Well, the heavy touch with Monken here is going to be something that I don't know how to identify it yet. I do see the blocking schemes completely different. Jerry Sandusky alluded to that. And, you know, anytime Jerry's talking O-line, I listen. Anytime Rod Woodson's talking back end, I listen. And, you know, just in the broadcast, because my wife's like, "Why are you watching this garbage?" I'm like, I'm kind of hearing, I want to see what Rod has to say. Because Rod, Dennis, I give praise here. And, you know, you make me gratefulness, you know, at times. But, like, Rod Woodson's one of my favorite
people. You and I have talked about Rod. I've had the privilege of meeting him at a Hall of Fame dinner, sat with him, and brought up your name, and he had nothing but praise about his relationship with you and vice versa. But he's a salt-of-the-earth type of a guy, as you mentioned many times during our show.
Just, as great a person as he was a player, as a teacher. I mean, he was there the day we landed in Oakland with Niels, and Jack Del Rio put me up in front of the Raiders to tell my wife's story. He was the defensive backs coach that day. Mike Tice was on that staff. So in that old Oakland building at the foot of the airport in Oakland, California that day. And, you know, so Rod was on the coaching side, and I've spent many nights with Rod Woodson sitting and talking football late into the evening. And so just here, spending 3 hours on the couch, even with him with a preseason game, to see what he's seeing on the back end. But the offensive line, it's changed. And Pat Ricard, and what are we going to do? And how are we going to use our tight ends? And what's really going to be the hole for a running back? And running backs, you have to make decisions. You mentioned Justin Forsett, by far the best running back. Now, nothing against Jamal Lewis, right? Nothing against Ray Rice, who was frigging great, especially a better blocker. Ray Rice picking up blocks as this stout little pinball, keeping Joe safe from getting wiped out, like blocking as a part of the running back game and identifying holes. Justin Forsett for my dough, and another phenomenal human being, Justin Forsett, just a credit to good people. And also shares my birthday, by the way, Justin Forsett. But, I would say from that perspective, how the hell do I know whether J.K. Dobbins is going to pick up a safety blitz? Like, I haven't seen it, and I haven't seen Lamar react to it. Lamar doesn't get blitzed like that because he gets out of the way. He embarrasses people that do that, right? Well, and he can throw the ball, and he has wide receivers. But this isn't going to look like pinball. This isn't going to look like what Greg Roman had on that, the old electronic football games. That's what the 2019-20 team sort of looked like when they were morphing out of Joe Flacco and into Lamar. Sure. And trying to figure out when Roman was the running game coordinator or whatever the hell it was back in the day, and they're trying to get James Urban to figure out what Lamar is going to be, and Greg Roman to like have a little bit of confidence for him to throw the ball, but to whom at that point, right? They have weapons, they have toys, they have everything they need, but they have a new terminology, new blocking schemes. Like, I don't know how Ronnie Stanley's really going to react to this in week 8, that because it's different. And they don't even know who the left guard is. So these are all real questions for the football team.
No, no question about it. Zone blocking scheme installed. And I think Ronnie Stanley, him being a dancing bear, having great feet, I think he'll adapt to the system very, very well. But I got into a discussion with several fans on Twitter the other day. I don't see a role for Pat Ricard in this offense. I just don't. I think if he's on the field, it signals it's going to be a run play. He doesn't offer any explosiveness of any matter, of any type in the passing game. I saw this kid, Vokolek, from Nebraska getting downfield. And I think he deserves a roster spot over Pat Ricard. And people are saying, well, what are they going to do in third and short? Well, you can bring in one of those 10 or 11 offensive linemen, stick them at fullback, and have J.K. Dobbins or Gus Edwards run behind him. But I just don't see a role for Pat Ricard in this offense.
Well, I mean, I love the fact that they have all these able-bodied, capable players, even the veteran players on the right side of the offensive line. I don't have any question about them picking this up. I have a question about the orchestra being run for the first time in September, because we're just not going to see it out on the field. And Dobbins is now just sort of getting his hamstrings, back into order. And they'll be running him around a little bit. And yeah, I would think they'll send his ass out onto the field and make him play.
I don't know about that. I don't think he plays in the preseason. I think that's part of his deal. I can't imagine him getting hurt against the Commanders 2 years ago. I can't imagine J.K. Dobbins playing in a meaningless preseason game.
Well, somebody's got to play.
It'll be Mitchell, the Mitchell kid, Anthony's son. He'll be out there, and Justice Hill will be out there, maybe Gus Bus, but I don't think you'll see J.K. in the preseason. There's only 2 games left to go. You'll see him on opening day. So that's when you'll see J.K. Dobbins.
So listen, I'm going to rip off the Band-Aid here, because I know you want to talk about Kevin Brown, and it's your show, and I'm the guest on the show here, at least for the time being, because I'm usually the host around here. But, I'm watching the Ravens game the other night, and it's preseason, and you know, even your buddy, your seafood buddy over in Dundalk, you know, text out that give your tickets away. PSA, your tickets are worthless for the preseason. Give them to a kid, right? So things on TV, and I'm, you know, I'm watching it and I'm thinking to myself, Jerry Sandusky in his soul knows this is the biggest ripoff of all time, right? Preseason football is the biggest ripoff. Stedman was writing about that in the 70s, pissing off Irsay, right? Like, literally.
Hey, look, we have 10 tickets. I gave them all away. We sent some kids to the stadium so they can enjoy them.
It's amazing, you know, the sham of Chad Steele telling my community I'm not a legitimate reporter and then calling the NFL. I mean, we're in a world now where this Angelos thing that happened last week, no offense, right? I mean, you run Coons Baltimore Ford and like Mr. Coons and your family, like you could not conduct business in this fashion.
Would not, because it
would not be a part of your code. It would not
be our DNA.
It's not honest. They're dishonest. It's dishonesty in regard to lots and lots of things that has gone unchecked because of the title on their card. I mean, Dan Snyder's out, you know, chasing cheerleaders around, right? Like, and it took them years to get rid of him, and they had an investigation, and the investigator gave an oral report instead of a written report because they can get away with it. And, you know, so the fact that I'm sitting here watching this stuff on the outside, I never lose sight of that. And I'm getting old enough to just understand the inherent dishonesty. I mean, the Kevin Brown thing on Friday, that Greg Bader would praise himself in the press release that he writes that they put out for this kid, who's clearly, you know, I mean, he's taken on this Opie characteristic. He's a hell of a broadcaster, but he is in no position to stand up for himself. He's got a pregnant wife. He lives in Baltimore. He's got a house here. He's got a future. He needs to be employed by other billionaires in the future. And this... The dishonesty of it is so brazen that I could never, and to your point, I would never. And if I would, you wouldn't do business with me.
You could, but you wouldn't, right? It's not your DNA.
No, I couldn't, and I wouldn't.
How about the statement he put out? The statement he put out felt very much like it was written at gunpoint. Like, this is
blink twice, you know, Kevin.
Right. Help, right? What's the safe word for you?
Well, now he becomes a punchline, right? Like, well, this poor kid's just trying to do his job. Now he's the punchline because we're laughing at him, with him. But how can we be laughing with him? Because this is clearly not much different than the Redskins cheerleaders or me fighting with Chad Steele for my career after 30 years when all of you know what I do. And they're issuing the press release saying there's nothing to see here. Nestor's just too lazy to come and cover the team. Like, that's their press release. When the truth and the truth's coming. But this is how they treat anyone who speaks anything that's not what Greg Bader and John Angelos think. And the money last week, you and I haven't even gotten together since the story broke. And I knew about this on Wednesday, that what John was really seeking, is, there's no lease.
Oh, you mentioned it. Yeah, you did.
I mentioned it to you before it became public last. He wants $300 million more. He wants 50% more than Bisciotti got and the whole parking lot to take that away from Bisciotti to exit the parity clause.
That's not going to happen. Clearly, it's not going to happen.
Obviously.
I mean, there's no way the Ravens signed off on that.
Well, this was his father's negotiating technique. I want Mars and Venus. Well, we can't even get to the moon. How am I going to give you that? And I can't give you that. You want to build a skyscraper over the Howard Street Tunnel? It can't be done structurally. Well, I don't care that it can't be done. I fart rainbows and unicorns, and that's what I want. And it's like, I mean, the people that have dealt with John Angelos, and I've talked to five of them. And Dennis, I'm going to Mako this week. I'm going to be with nothing but everybody who runs the state, and how hard it is. How hard would it be for the tourism committee to get $600 million from the legislature? How hard would it be for Mr. Coons to get $600 million from the legislature to build a bigger lot, to take over, to just eminent domain security square and decide that's your dealership now. And you're going to give me $600 million to build my dealership. It's insane. I mean, it's Republicans should be mad. Independents should be mad. Democrats who are trying to fix schools and police and like the harbor, like all of that. And this guy hasn't had a clue about anything. He's leading all these people around like he's done something. And they're all like, all right, dude, what's your plan? And you spend 10 minutes with him and you know he's full of manure, that he doesn't have architect's plans. And he's just got demands. Like a petulant child, because he has the franchise. And meanwhile, Rob Manfred's like, dude, you're not moving the franchise. And John's probably thinking, well, you're about to let Oakland move. Let me bring my lawyers. Let me get Al Davis's descendants,
right,
and we'll see what I can and can't do. Because you're not going to tell me what I can do with my franchise. And if I want to fart rainbows and build a glass bridge over the 395 spaghetti warehouse, I'll do that. And if you don't, I'm not letting you play. My baseball team won't play in your stadium.
Well, the other piece of this mess.
I don't know what the leverage is, Dennis. The leverage doesn't make sense to anyone sane, other than he wants what he wants and he's going to take his toys and go home. And oh, by the way, the team's winning and don't ask me any questions.
Right.
And everybody I employ is muted and listen to the games. We're in first place and we're just great. We're going to win and sell tickets and playoffs and World Series. We don't have a lease, man. So even though I want to make the lead, the baseball team and
right.
Grayson Rodriguez, like they don't have a lease. It's insane.
It is insane. And that should be the story. The story should be Grayson Rodriguez, the team, how well they're doing. But the stories are what? If it's not the lack of a lease, it's a Kevin Brown situation. So this thing keeps compounding. And that's what happens when you have awful and poor leadership at the top.
Well, the biggest concern of the fan base should be that Mike Elias can get a different gig and that his contract's up and that there's no checks John could write to him. You know what I mean? That he could walk away after, I don't know if he had a 5-year deal. I mean, it's all, shrouded in secrecy.
Let me ask you a question. Why would Mike Elias take this job, Nestor? I mean, I know he had the thing with.
Because he could start from scratch. You know what? That is awesome that you asked me that, because I interacted with Mike Elias one time publicly 4 months ago. I went to the CEO club luncheon with Leonard Raskin.
Right.
I knew a lot of people there. I mean, and it was small. It was very intimate. It was 60 or 70 people. It was really small. It was up at Hayfields in Hunt Valley. It was the second week of the season, maybe April. I mean, the team was clearly pretty good, but there was a lot of questions about May and Stoughton was the big fans were mad. And Adam Frazier being on the team and that they didn't get a pitcher, in the offseason. Still a lot of that second week of the season, even though they were winning. And I got to ask a question, and TJ Brightman's there. Bader wasn't there. TJ may hate me more than Bader, but I was sitting 2 feet away. I mean, Mike Elias could fist bump from where I sat at the table. I sat at his back. I gave him a copy of Purple Rain 1 and 2 and said, hey, I hope maybe one day you'll bring a championship. Here's two stories with a happy ending, right? But on that day, he got up and did a song and dance with Doug. And Doug Strauss does a great job with CEO Club of Baltimore. It's a great organization. It's something you would really enjoy, mm-hmm. On a monthly basis, but especially when they bring sports people in. I attended, Ted Leonsis did one. They were doing them downtown where I lived in the Harbor Court like 10, 12 years ago. And Ted Leonsis came in and did one day. And there was a bigger crowd at that one. But Leonard was at that one as well. I remember seeing Leonard. Before he was a sponsor and a friend and my financial advisor. But I got to ask one question. And everybody in the room who knew me, and there were, I knew personally 20 of the 60 or 70 people there. And there were a couple 40 people there that were way older, in their 80s. I mean, it was a little bit older crowd. And it was all older people. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of young people there. And so it was old schoolers. And I got to ask a question and everybody was like, oh no, they gave Nestor the mic to ask. I mean, like literally there was a little bit of a hush came over the room. What is he going to say? What is he going to ask Mike about something that's going to piss off John? Right. Or, this is my one chance to punch, right? Like literally. And I asked him that question. I literally said to him, when you took this job, what about it has led you to believe then and now that you could get this done? And I knew the answer, but I wanted to hear him say it, because he was way more transparent than I thought he would be. I was really impressed by him, Dennis. You know what I mean? I was fully impressed by him. And but it was the blank page. I know we're going to stink for a couple years. I'm
right.
going to stink, and we're going to get good players. We're going to get Colton Cowser. We're going to get Jackson Holiday. We've already got
But he never talked about the end game, though. He talked about the blank page. But to me, everybody should have an exit plan. If they don't have an exit plan, then that's shame on them. But to me, okay, you're coming to a franchise that had been poorly run for a long, long time with stingy ownership.
Well, the other guy didn't survive it. John Vitalin, the guy that they hired to be the business guy, he didn't let – I mean, nobody met him. Like, and there is no – TJ's doing that job now. There is no Joe Foss. There is no Dick Cass. There is no Dennis Colazzo. There's no grown-up there like that from the industry
but
outside the industry in the way that they went and got a baseball genius from another company and brought him in, right?
Yeah, so the question is, again, you take this job, you know you'll be able to get the farm system going and then whatnot and blah, blah, blah. But then what happens when you can't sign these players? What happens at that point? Do you move on? Is that your exit plan?
This is where I am. And if I had a drink with Mike Elias, and I did write to him last week because I sent him what I wrote about John. I'm not hiding. You know, I'm a journalist. I'm straight up. I walk the streets.
Well, you're also self-employed too. You don't have to filter. You're not.
But I walk the streets
by your boss.
You know what I mean? Like
again,
I don't. Anything I write about John Harbaugh or say about John Harbaugh, I'll text to John Harbaugh. you know what I mean? First, and everything that happened with Chad Steele last year, and I'm going to make this clear to everyone soon. I wrote to Steve Bisciotti. I wrote to John. All of these people. I'm not in hiding. I'm not hiding in Nashville or hiding on my boat in the Bahamas and putting some, you know, well-paid executive to keep people away from me. That's not what I do. But for me, with where they are as a franchise and where the future may lie for them, it's all in Mike Elias being empowered to continue to do his job well. And the one thing Mike Elias has not done, and if I got to sit with him now, I'd say, you have never had to go down the hall and ask him for money, ever. Because from the beginning, you sat in the room and said, Brady's gone, your brother, I'm not listening to anybody. I'm running the baseball or I'm not coming. And if the minute it gets sour, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go. The way Duquette went, the way McPhail watched Flanagan kill himself and had to get out of here, and the way that Frank Wren thought you were the devil's advocate, and the way that Pat Gillick quietly left and went and won a handful of rings, so did Lucchino, so did Charles Stein. They all left. And Mike Elias is like, dude, I'm 38 years old or whatever the hell he was when he took the gig. He's like, I'm going to be doing this a while. You're not going to crush me. So from the beginning, John's gotten out of the way. And I think John, who loved to think he was a rotisserie baseball player back in the 90s, as I pointed out in my letter, because I was around the team then, in the signings of Sid Fernandez and Chris Sabo and other players, even trades, he got involved in being a baseball expert, as did his father. I don't think John's there anymore, but John thinks he's a business expert, right? Like, John would tell you he's the president of Masson. He invented Masson. That it's turned out $8 billion and blah, 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 blah. My team's worth $2 billion and I've taken over my family's estate. And I'm the grown up and I make country music artists. And like, I'm sure John feels that way about himself because I've seen the press conferences. But
you haven't seen the books.
Yeah, right. That was the open invitation. I would say this for Elias, and this would be my question. Where's the level of confidence that when it comes time to do that, that he's not going to be the one embarrassed like Kevin Brown?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if they're willing to emasculate Kevin Brown and put him back on the broadcast, and they've been doing this even in the aftermath of the Mike Flanagan, like in the aftermath of all the off, I mean, me, I mean, I can't say I was suicidal about them, but I was despondent being thrown out 17 years ago when this is what I've committed to do with my life, and feeling 17 years later, like, doesn't matter whether your name's John Miller, John Lowenstein, doesn't matter, Cal Ripken, Brooks Robinson. They've been sideways with everybody because they don't care about people. And they don't even care about their own reputation to put out that trash on Friday night, that's still where they are right now. That's where it is right now. And I said to my wife, you know what? I almost went back this year, gave them some money. I'm excited. You're giving them money. You're excited. You went back. I almost sort of forgot about it a little bit. The winning can deodorize all of this until it doesn't. And last week was a bad week for them. And what's going on with the state? And I'm down at Mako. It's bad for them. And Kevin Brown, and they think it's good to issue that press release instead of doing what my buddy Greg Abel, who's a PR guy, writes this. It was farts and unicorns, quite frankly, Greg, because they're not going to do anything sane. But PR people saying this is what they need to do to fix this, and they're incapable. They're in Friday night and the Kevin Brown thing, and they're incapable. And Mike Elias is in the middle of this. And he took this because it was blank, a blank sheet, in the same way that Frank Wren took this, thinking he had some elixir that Pat Gillick didn't have, in the same way that Mike Hargrove took the gig after Ray Miller and Davey Johnson couldn't stand it, in the same way that Buck came in. And the first thing, by the way, did you see the Buck Showalter's wife wrote about me?
I saw it. I saw the Facebook post. I'm not on Facebook, but I saw it on social media. Yeah, you know what?
I didn't brought that up on
They
the
were
air.
told that you were a bad guy to stay away from you. That's what they were told.
Everybody, their wives. They were telling
That's par
players'
for the course. Look,
wives.
you're public enemy number one for this team. You are.
Why?
Be
I love them too much.
because in their opinion, you tried to force them to move the team with Free the Birds.
I tried to get them to change their behavior,
I
and
hear
I
you,
failed
but
dramatically. I failed dramatically.
that's not how they took it.
Listen. I
They
told
took
this
it.
to Luke. Luke and
Well,
I did a shoot interview and we got sideways. So you can go listen to that too. We so and so I told him this, and the second time I've said this, and I don't think I've said this on the air much at all in 17 years. I went back recently, 25th anniversary, and I found the book I wrote for my father that summer. I was inspired. I got married. They didn't pay the bill. I couldn't believe they were just awful people, you know? And at that time, Bisciotti was taking me backstage with Jim Irsay trying to get the Colts records back to Baltimore. So I'll write about that soon, too. That I sat out on a deck for 90 minutes with cigars. I was the one not smoking the cigars with Jim Irsay and Steve Bisciotti at the Biltmore in that era. So between 4 and 6, when the Bird incident happened, they didn't pay the bill, like all of that stuff that happened back then. That summer, I wrote 19 chapters about why I love the Orioles, why I was doing Free the Birds, why it was important to the community, what it meant to me to have this view of the city every minute of my life looking out the window, and feeling my father's spirit talking to me about the Orioles, and my family's name talking to me about the Orioles, and my place owning a sports radio station. And at that time, having been on the air 15 years, that I wanted it to be better. I wanted it to be literally what it was last night, where I was up all night cheering for them, watching them with a friend up at the Hollywood Casino, watching Grayson Rodriguez deal, watching home runs, seeing San Diego, seeing Orioles fans in San Diego on my timeline, all of that. I want it full. I want it vibrant. It was never that. I lived downtown for 20 years. I lost $250,000 in my investment because it was so awful. Now they'll blame that on crime, and but you know, they played a baseball game when tanks were circling the stadium to become world. I mean, they made that decision instead of playing that game somewhere else. So they've done a lot of awful, you know, like terrible things. But in 06, when I did Free the Birds, the shirts, the signs, the tee, like all of that, I really thought. And this is how stupid I was, okay? And maybe it speaks to the spirit of my heart. I really thought he would have an Ebenezer Scrooge moment. I really thought I could have, Dennis, I swear to God, I was not doing it to be mean. Go back and watch it,
Oh, I know
any
that,
word I
but
said, any
you
word
and
I
I
said, any
talked.
word I wrote, any of that, even as I was angry, like all of that, all of it was designed to have him view it and say, I'm hurting people. I don't
Yeah,
want to
but not
hurt
a
people.
shot. Not a shot, though. Had you and I talked about that back in 06, I would advise against you doing it, because knowing the animal, knowing how he and the family would take it, they took it as a very personal attack.
You know what I took as a personal attack? Their horrible ownership and their malfeasance and their lies. I took that as a personal attack. As a media member, every time I took a notebook to somewhere and they lied and forced me to do the Kevin Brown dance in order to have access and be there. And if I didn't lie for them, they were going to treat me like garbage at every turn and tell people I'm a bad guy. I took that as I took offense to that. I took offense having to go on the air every day and defend the indefensible. The things that were happening to John Miller, the things that were happening to the team, signing Albert Bell, the way I was treated just as a human being who loved the team, who supported the team, who built an entity to love the team, support, to create passion around the team.
But
it's the reason you sponsored me for 20 years. They never understood the community enough and sat down with people like me long enough to understand that it was born out of love, not out of hate. And it's born out, and it was born out of, and I stand really proud of this right now because the team's fixed on the field right now. This is how good it should. I should be in Costas on a Sunday night the last 20 years and having cheering the way they've had in St. Louis and Boston and normal places where they've had normal ownership, you know?
But this is ownership, Nestor, that doesn't want the media to tell the truth. This is ownership that wants the media branch to be part of the PR branch. They don't want you guys, us guys, to call balls and strikes. They don't want us to call them as we see them, just like John Miller, just like Kevin Brown. And you can't have that, whether you're the Ravens or the Orioles. You can't expect the media to enhance your PR department. You expect the media to be fair, balanced, to call them as they see them. If you stink, you expect the media to say you stink.
I wouldn't expect anybody to listen to this show if I went and wore an orange bird. No offense to Rob Long or Jason Lockenfora, but like, don't pitch to me that you now are a true voice. You're not. You're Kevin Brown. You just are.
You're part of their PR machine, which you are.
And that's why they employ you, because you're on the air over at the Fan now, and you're neutered. Right. And they know you're neutered. And WBAL was so neutered, they never covered the story last week, and they put his voice on the airwaves. And I told the story. Like, it's just the broadcast can't be good. And I've you know, Melanie Newman, I've said she's not very – they don't give her a chance to be good. She might be great if she could take the mic and say
and
be a personality and call the game and have fun and not be fearing every thing's being judged that she may be – reprimanded or any of them. That goes for all of them. I mean, it's a blanket statement as a guy who employed half of the people I'm talking about and gave them a chance in life. So like, I never did that, and I would never do that. Would I go down and say the Orioles screwed us out of $30,000 and it's affecting how I help you feed your family, and here's the truth? They all knew that when I did Free the Birds. They were all in the basement for a meeting every week when the Orioles didn't pay their bill. And then sent the bird to assault me thinking it's funny.
Right.
I don't know what to say. Mike Flanagan didn't think it was funny. I promise you that. Because Mike Flanagan, of all the people, he was the guy who came to me, took me for a crab cake at Michael's Cafe up in Timonium the night before he took the job. And he said, I'm going to fix this with you and the family. They're not bad people. You know, they're just misunderstood. Dennis, 20 years later, and he's dead. They're bad people. And I on Friday night, they just put another stake into the – we haven't changed a bit at all.
Master, ownership's job is to remove obstacles for their employees, right, not to put obstacles in the way. So whether it's the lease, the Kevin Brown situation, this is an organization that continuously puts obstacles in the way of the people versus removing them, which is why they have turnover, which is why they don't have long-time employees, which is why they're always in a state of flux. And which is why they're always distracting from what's going on in the field, whether it's good or bad. And it's been bad for such a long time, nobody cared. Now that it's good, people actually care.
What a week for a turd, though, right? They had the Eddie Murray night. They're in first place. They're not kind of sort of good. They're fantastic.
Good. Very good.
They are credible in every way, every day. This kid Rutschman hasn't been swept in a baseball series since 2000.
That's insane.
I mean,
that's
like, there's
insane.
Just
they have talent just, out of the gazoo.
There's DNA there that says pile diver to me about some of these kids, and even the O'Hearns and these imports and this Fuji guy that wets himself every third outing, and you know, ball six, ball seven, ball nine, you know, like, but
wild
it's
thing.
It's fun talking about this. It's fun being up late. It's fun. You're you know, on half a vacation halfway around the world, and you and I are, you're still, Luke's pissed that Sunday he couldn't get the game on the Roku. I mean, they don't have their act together. And you And the audience needs somebody like me, because you're not going to hear that on WBAL. You're not going to hear that at WJZ. You're not going to hear that anywhere where they in any way do any business with the Orioles, because everyone that does business with the Orioles is Kevin Brown.
Yeah.
You're all Kevin.
I think that's
I'm not Kevin
statement.
Brown.
Yeah.
That's an accurate statement.
Yeah, absolutely. You can speak your mind. I can speak my mind, and you don't censor me. We don't censor each other.
When I disagree with you, it's legitimate for our audience it's legitimate. I mean, like, and I'm not going to hate you. You're not going to hate me if we disagree. You know,
we love Baltimore. We love our teams. We're passionate about our teams, and we're going to speak our mind. What Kevin Brown said was the truth. He was speaking the truth. He was actually putting a positive spin on it. And he still gets censored. He still gets neutered.
Which when that happens, when the kid comes home and is beaten by the dad because he doesn't even know why, then lose all faith in the relationship for the next broadcaster that comes in that needs to be credible. Man, when you take away a broadcaster's credibility, I told you the Art Modell story. It's true. In my soul, I feel it every day. When Art Modell told me, always be fair. If you're not criticizing me, they'll never believe a word you say.
That's true. That's very true. That's a truest statement was never spoken. And Art Modell was one of a kind. He was a class act. Not a great businessman at Cleveland, which is why he got himself in trouble. But gratefully, the franchise came to Baltimore and things were never the same after that for the better. But I read a thing a long time ago that it took a while for me to understand, Esther. And it went something like this. When your best employees become silent, it's a bad sign for the company. And I've lived through it. And not only are the Orioles' best employees becoming silent, they're being silenced. It's one thing if you as an individual, something happens and you disengage from your organization. It's a whole totally different dynamic when the organization censors you. And I don't know how you can be a part of that team. And I get it. People have bills to pay. You got kids in the way, et cetera. And sometimes you got to bite a hole through your lip. But it's just an awful look. And it does take away from a great product on the field.
Well, we're watching the games and, I'm into it. It's fun. Again, I've been online looking for an orange Aparicio 11 throwback jersey.
Nice.
I got gifted that Jim Palmer jersey. I was wearing it that day with you over at Costas. I've worn it. I wore it back to Costas the other day. It doesn't fit me, but I like it.
Tell me about Costas.
It's going to be my jersey this year. It's going to be my 2023, Jim Palmer well.
Tell me about Costas. Tell me about the crowd when Mullins made that catch when he hit the home run. The crowd had a pop. While they're waiting to crabs and crab cakes, the crowd had to be going wild at the restaurant.
Well, the craziest thing is my wife and I got there like fifth, sixth inning. And, I got some fried shrimp. Delicious. My wife had a beer. And we're waiting on Leonard Raskin. And Leonard was picking up his buddy at the airport. So I didn't know exactly when he's coming. And he said he's on his way. And the Mullins thing happened. And the Bauman thing happened and Leonard walked in. I'm like, dude, you've just missed the craziest 15 minutes ever. He's like, I was listening in the car. It's unbelievable. Blah, blah, blah. I said, this place went crazy. I mean, when Mullins went over, fell down and like signaled that he had it. And everybody just went up like he'd won the World Series. And I'm thinking, man, the hair on the back of my neck stood up because it was like, I haven't been in a bar for baseball when this has happened since I was probably too young to be in a bar. Hooters 96 or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was a long time ago. And there was that moment. And then Leonard was waiting. Christine was actually there and the bar was crowded. I mean, 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, everybody's eating crabs or slinging, people staying out of the way. And Leonard came in with his party. And that's when the home run, the near home run, right? He hit the foul ball.
Right.
We're all like, and everybody's hanging on it. And then he hits the bomb and the place goes crazy again. So there was a lightness in the, it felt like Christmas.
Oh, man, that's great. Listen, I can't remember ever screaming at the TV set during a baseball game. Do it all the time with football, but it was one of the Astros games when I believe Mateo missed the fly ball that.
Oh, off the wall. Right.
Off the wall. I screamed at the TV. I can't tell you the last time I screamed at the TV set over a baseball game. That tells you everything you need to know about me and my passion for this team and how much I love them.
You know what? And if I own the baseball team, the fact that you have that in your soul, it would be such a gift to me that I would want to honor that. You know what I mean? Like, and it's it, it this
Well,
wouldn't
that's what good people do.
This wouldn't be hard.
That's what good people do.
And
again,
to
make you invested, to make you engaged, right? Just like you have the fans, just like any organization, engaged someplace in the middle and disengaged, right? So
the fact that this kid is doing things that he should have learned from his father to never do. Like, especially after John Miller, tread lightly on the kid calling the game and be kind to him and support him. Don't treat him like that. Don't treat him like that. I'm offended on his behalf, and I'm going to be angry for him. Rob Manfred needs to get involved, right? At some point here, we don't know where Dad. I mean, they're not returning. John's not returning calls from the governor or the commissioner. Like John's on walkabout.
Great.
But you know why? Because the season's
that's
going
ominous.
On. I don't want to have any distractions, Dennis.
Right. That's ominous. He would have loved to have had a deal done by the All-Star break. That didn't happen.
You can't have any distractions now. But when ESPN comes in, he'll be up there next to Mike Elias, pounding on his phone.
You know what? And speaking of ESPN, the best they could do was talk to Felix Bautista about The Wire. I mean, come on now. You talk about some Bush League reporting. I mean, have some class about yourself, ESPN. That should have pissed off. If I'm the owner of the Orioles, that would have pissed me off a billion times more than what Kevin Brown said, which would have not even registered on my radar. But ESPN comes to town on a Sunday night game that we haven't been on the air on Sunday night in how many years? And they're going to sit there and talk to a guy who doesn't even speak English and translate to him, has he seen The Wire? What does that matter? You tell me. I'd be pissed off at ESPN if I was the Orioles ownership, wouldn't you?
Well, and that would be something to spout off about us versus them, right?
Right.
Like, there is no us.
How
because
dare
I'm not
you?
On Team John. You know what I mean? I'm not on Team Angelos. You know, you're dividing your own fan base. And that's been going on, you know, since they squirted me in my life 20 years ago.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they it's us and them for them. And
it
us is only
negative. It's negative. One of us, Felix, have you had a crab cake someplace, right? Have you been to Harbor Place? How about the aquarium? Have you been to a football game? Right? Have you been to the zoo? Right? What have you done here in Baltimore? What do you like about Baltimore? Don't give them some BS about The Wire. I mean, I started watching The Wire. I couldn't watch it. It became unwatchable for me. I couldn't finish the series.
I admitted to David Simon I've never watched it. And
I couldn't finish this. I watched
it.
And
it was Freak Moeller. You've never seen The Wire. I'm like, a lot of the
no,
things I've never seen.
No,
but
no.
Like, I live downtown. I didn't want to have that association to it. And I think, you know, part of it though, Dennis, hold on a second. I'm going to push back on you. I'm going to push back hard on you actually on this.
Come on, bring it.
They're the ones that play
the segment. It's okay.
No. They're the ones that play the Omar whistle for him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know.
Okay. Yeah. The Ravens brag about the Omar whistle.
I hear
right?
you. I hear
that
you.
Omar whistle. We're tough. We're badass. We'll slit your
look.
Throat. We got a gun.
That's a bad look.
Yeah.
That's
I don't know. No. No, no,
that's
no. I don't even know who the hell Omar is, but I don't.
I know he is. I watched the first three seasons. He's a character in the show, but still.
Yeah, I mean,
anything
I know that.
Anything that paints the city in a negative light, I'm not about that.
I know
we
enough
be celebrating.
About Omar to know that Omar is not should not be on our public relations form.
No, he's
you know
not.
I mean?
He's not. Give us a true Baltimore hero that stands out. Talk about
Big
Daddy or somebody like
that.
So
I would say to you, if the Omar whistle is going to be the thing coming in, I think it's fair game to ask him if he's seen The Wire.
Well, but you're mixing that with football and baseball. The baseball team has never played the Omar whistle, have they? That's a Ravens thing.
No, the Orioles have been in on this. You know, like,
that's news to me. I did not know that.
Yeah, the Orioles.
Well, shame on them too. Just like shame on the Ravens
for
glorifying something like that.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
That's a bad PR move right there. So if that's what they did, then that says a lot too. Why would you want to do that?
Well,
pick 100 great things about
Baltimore.
That
makes us tough. That makes us tough. No, it doesn't. It makes us stupid.
Pick 100 great things about Baltimore. That's not one of them. That's a negative thing about Baltimore.
Well, hey, man.
And we're Baltimore positive, right? We're Baltimore positive. Let's talk about some positive stuff.
You know what's interesting this weekend? The Baltimore positive part goes to Oakland this weekend, and you're going to see this empty stadium, the shell of it. We lived through that here. I mean, our stadium's been empty for a long time, right? And we don't have a lease, and they don't have a lease. And that'll be a story this weekend for those paying attention. I mean, that'll percolate back up. But what percolates back up is they come back from this road trip of, 7-2 from the West Coast. And they get back home next week, and where are the fans, people coming out? You know, the thing for me, Dennis, with the team, and I'll tip the cap on this part, I live two blocks away. If they weren't jerks, right? If they weren't doing all this Kevin Brown banning people like me, just if they were a normal team and they were offering this $60 August package, you know, come to all the games and walk around and buy our beer, basically a standing room only, hang out at the bar kind of deal. That's kind of an amazing thing if you really want to go. You know, I mean, I'd love me a $200 Merriweather pass for the month of August where I could go to 10 shows and hang out and, you know, have a good time on a summer night, be engaged in it. There's more value in the Oriole games now than there's ever been, right? Like going to an Oriole game now, it has some value. I mean, they're charging $20 for this. It's trying to get $10 still on the weeknights. And they're going to use the kids going back to school as the reason there's nobody there. I'll hear all that. But this is the time to when they start the games at 6:30, 7 o'clock. I mean, kids can go, and not little kids, but like this is a month and a half where John is, you know, putting his finger into the turkey and saying, well, is there any money here? I mean, we're winning. Why aren't you guys coming back? Well, I'm not coming back because you're a jerk. And I'm not giving you my money, but I hope people come back. I mean, it started to swell a little bit, but I mean, the Houston series was a lot of Houston. You know, it wasn't
a lot of Houston fans for sure.
Yeah.
It was a great series, by the way. I love the vibe. I mean, you got a really, really good team. Defending world champs doesn't get much better than that. And competitive games. Games where even a three-run lead heading to the ninth is in dispute, right?
I call them like I see them, right? And you know, baseball been better, better good to me. And I'm Venezuelan and all that stuff. So there's a whole part of my Venezuelan DNA that would defend anything or anybody Venezuelan. Jose Altuve cheated. And he had a wire, and they're all cheaters. Once a cheater, always a cheater for all of them. And so when he comes in, I root against him.
I mean, he's a hell of a ball player. I mean, the guy can hit the ball. He's a player. He's a baller. Not real tall, but got a great swing about him.
And by the way, Tom Brady was a cheater too. So I just want to make sure, like when I'm thinking of cheaters that, you know, haven't been labeled, Tom Brady's a cheater.
Hey, if you got a minute, you said something in a pre-show production meeting about Guns N' Roses. Didn't have a good experience at the show. What happened?
Well, listen, you know, I'm open-hearted. I'm open-minded. I was a music critic. You know, I panned David Bowie in the 80s, right? I mean, I don't say make mistakes, but I've erred in judgment, you know, or as Fonzie would say, I was, you know, sometimes. But in the modern era, I don't get forced to go to these shows. Nobody's holding a, you know, gun or a rose at my head. A lot of times it's about price, right? So the tickets were 40, 50 bucks. I love, 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 love the Pretenders. So like love, love, love the Pretenders. I almost didn't meet my wife the night that my friend in New Hampshire that introduced me to my wife said, come up on this Friday night, go to this hockey game. I'm like, I'll come up, but I'm going to go down to Boston and see the Pretenders. They're playing the Orpheum that night. He's like, no, you got to go to this hockey game. I know this girl. I'm like, yeah, but I want to go see the Pretenders. You know, like I came so close to going to see the Pretenders. So that show was about the weather being great. We hadn't been to Hershey. I love going up to shows in Hershey, man. Your families, good parking, you know, a little, it's bucolic. It's an hour and a half away. It's nice. I'd way rather go there than down to whatever they're calling the Jiffy Lube, the down at the edge of, you know, Virginia, Manassas. I don't want to go there. Or even going to Philly. I'd rather go up to Hershey. So Guns N' Roses, I saw videos. They played in Philly. They played in D.C. two summers ago. They were great. Axl went out and did shows with AC/DC years ago when Brian Johnson lost his hearing. And so I didn't expect it to be bad. But I had a couple friends text me saying, hey, I'm going to see the show in Pittsburgh next week. I'm hearing it's not good. And I'm like, well, it's $40 and I want to see the Pretenders and I love Guns N' Roses. I actually had lunch, a long liquid lunch with Slash at Mickey Mantle's. Had him on the show.
Fun. Yeah.
Me, Slash and Denny Nagel. The morning after Denny Nagel pitched Game 4 of the World Series at Shea Stadium, the day that Denny Nagel won Game 5 that night, he didn't pitch, but we were sitting at Mickey Mantle's and Slash walked in and did the show that afternoon, had lunch at our booth. So I love Guns N' Roses. It just wasn't any good. Like, I mean, and I don't want to be mean to Axl. Axl can't sing. I don't think he can hear himself.
Wow.
I think it's sad. No, I think it sounded like the singer was tone deaf and it wasn't a monitor issue or whatever. It wasn't very good. The band was great, like a freight train. The Pretenders were I mean, Christy Hines, 71 years old. She sings like she, I mean, she's great. They were great. So, and I've seen a lot of great shows this year. I saw Seal. Great. So great. I went back four more times. Bryan Adams was great. So you know, I've seen great stuff this summer. This wasn't great, you know, and it's a shame it wasn't great because the opening act was great. But no, so I give it a chance, and I'm not mean. It's just you're asking people to pay a lot of money. The seats up in front of $300 or $400.
Of course.
I'm not expecting you to be at your best when you're 60 years old. I'm just expecting it to be pass, not fail. That's all. Just pass. Well, I mean, it doesn't need to be the greatest night of my life. I only paid $45. There were a lot of kids there and families. It was beautiful. I mean, like it was a beautiful rock and roll night. It just wasn't. I gave it 90 minutes, Dennis. I wasn't. I gotcha. I didn't walk out. I just didn't really want to hear him not sing "Sweet Child of Mine" well. You know, like.
Well, we have the Temptations and the Four Tops later on in the year. Looking forward to that concert. Just
can't get next to you.
Oh, can't wait for that concert and. Saw Care Top the other night, 58 years old, put on a great 90-minute show, maybe an hour and 45. I had to Google his net worth, and I was amazed at what he's worth because he's been 17 years now, got a residency at the luxury hotel in Vegas. What would you guess Care Top's net worth is? Top of your head.
$250 million.
$70 million. Which I think that's a lot of money, man. I thought he was in the $10 million range, but my goodness gracious, for comedians.
I figure he might have had a $10 million a year residency there, you know, like whatever they're paying him.
Net worth is 70. So, well, maybe that's what he gets paid, but his net worth is $70 million. And again, he put on a fantastic show. He's our age and the props and everything else. Great crowd, very entertaining. Highly recommended if anybody is out in Vegas anytime soon.
All right. So, look. I got to leave you with this because I was going to put this in the middle of the segment when we started talking about Art Modell. Because Art, you know, was friends with all the old entertainers and whatnot. I'm going to leave you with my favorite off-color Art Modell joke, all right?
Okay.
Old-time 1960s joke. So Art, anytime you would see Art, and this is true, Michelle Modell and I are like lifer friends, and anytime I want to make her laugh, I send her a text. Ready? It makes me laugh to say it because I've said it before, but it made me blush. Anytime you'd see Art privately, you know, "Hey Art, how you feeling?" He'd say, "I feel like an 18-year-old." But where are you going to find one at this hour?
Nah, he was a good man. And
that's my Vegas joke for you. There's my so. Anytime I text with Michelle Modell, like I feel like an 18-year-old.
Where can I find it? In Vegas, you can find them at any hour you choose. I'm sure about that, and even older, if that's your taste. But he definitely belongs in the Hall of Fame, Nestor. I think that's one of the biggest misses in my lifetime.
Now they're trying to get Ozzy in twice, right? I think Ozzy would say, "Why don't you put Art in once?"
Art belongs in the Hall of Fame, and. They got to make that right before I.
They're never going to make that right.
Yeah, well, they should. When that guy in Cleveland, that goofball, when he passes on and goes to wherever his maker.
That's not. I don't think that's even it. I think
he drives it. He drives it.
Grossy. I know. I don't speak to Grossy.
I don't think many
people. It's personal with Grossy and me just because of the Art Modell thing. And he knows.
And
that.
It should be. He should be. He's an idiot. Something to let go.
Again, you accuse me that the Angelus family took what I did personally. I took their lies personally. So the same thing with Tony Grossi. Like, it's like, you mess with me, you mess with the village, right? It's kind of like sort of that. That's it.
Mess
you know?
With bull, get the horn. Nestor, I appreciate your time and your passion. Great stories. And look forward to our next segment. We'll have more to talk about Ravens, Orioles, and hopefully they'll be doing some good things on the field.
All my stories are true. That's what makes them so much fun.
Hey, the truth never changes, man. That's easy. You know what? I've been selling truth for 36 years. It's the easiest thing. The easiest thing to sell is the truth. It's just that not many people can handle it. That's the flip side to that.
Dennis, at this point, the truth is the baseball team's good. They're going to play playoff games here in October. They're going to play big games next month because that buys a big deal, right? Like winning the division, 3-game lead, 2-game lead, 4-game lead. Like, you know, that's going to be, and we're going to have the reason I did Free the Birds. You know, we're going to have a legitimate baseball chance. We're going to have Knights. We're going to have Cedric Mullins catches. We're going to have Mike Bauman blown saves. We're going to have Felix Bautista giving up grand slams. We're going to have Ryan O'Hearn hit grand slams. We're going to like Santander. we're going to have heroes and the heroes of Birdland.
Yeah,
so,
man.
You know, the next time. 6 weeks, interesting. The football team's going to fly in and play a handful of games between now and whenever the playoffs are around. And then they're going to ramp up and be 7-2, 8-3 in your mind. And in my mind too, quite frankly, I think they're going to be okay. I think I don't know if they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I think they're going to be okay out of the gate.
They have a shot.
And they are fascinating, as we brought up earlier in the segment, in regard to what they're going to be. So Dennis, 25th anniversary at NST, and I'm working harder than ever. I have no vacations, but I have nothing in my mind's eye other than having sports be relevant here. It's why I built the place 25 years ago. And quite frankly, there have been far, far too many spells where things have been bad in the case of Ray Rice, or, you know, jurisprudence, crazy stuff, Mike Flanagan, off the field things that were awful. But there hasn't been enough of this. Baseball games every night that matter, a football team that matters on the field. Don't forget off the field, important, the lease and the future of the franchise, all of that as a backdrop. Sports has never been more interesting, more relevant, and I have never been more seasoned to report on it. So that's where I am. The next couple of months are about sports around here and politics and how it plays. I'm going to be at Mako this week, and the Crab Cake Tour and the anniversary, like all of that. But my focus is on, they're playing meaningful baseball games and meaningful football games, and fans think we can win at both of them, and we can. And for that, I'm grateful, man. Like, I've waited a long time to just be able to stick to sports a little bit, which we're going to do around here, you know?
Well, I'm very grateful for you, Nestor. I had someone ask me about you the other day, and I said, listen, he is the most knowledgeable person I know when it comes to sports. He has a scary photographic memory. He can tell you dates and times about any sporting event you can bring up to him. So all the respect goes out to you, and I appreciate what you bring to the table every single day.
One of my dream guests on my bucket list, if Ray Bachman were producing me, would be to get Mary Lou Henner on, so she and I could compare dates.
There you go. There you go.
That'd be fun.
Sounds like a date. There he goes. Nestor J. Aparicio here on 1570 AM, Baltimore Positive, WNST, where we never stop talking sports. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.